welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you this week?
Great. We're, still hot weather down here in Georgia. I'm used to going to football games and sitting around in a sweatshirt and blue jeans, and here it's more like a tank top and cutoffs, but we're enjoying it.
This week, we're going to look at markers for cardiovascular disease. You know, there are some that have suggested that measurement of apolipoproteins might be better indication of the total number of atherogenic particles than simply looking at cholesterol. Primarily, the advantage is that cholesterol concentrations vary within HDL and LDL because of the lipid transfer process. But when you measure things like ApoB and ApoA1, you can get a direct assessment of the total number of atherogenic, for in other words, the LDL and VLDL and IDL particles, and the anti-atherogenic particles, particularly the HDL. So some studies, like the Amoris study, which involved nearly 200,000 people, reported that ApoB and ApoA1 are important predictors of cardiovascular disease. On the other hand, there are analyses of thousands of people, for example, from the Framingham study, that found that these very same markers had very low predictive value and didn't add any value over cholesterol. So, Mark, you picked an article this week from JAMA. It asks the question, sort of from a bigger forest perspective, are these lipid-related markers, including the apolipoB and A1, are they useful for prediction of a first cardiovascular event in adults? And what did they find?
What we really have to keep our eye on is what do we care about when we're getting these biomarkers to risk stratify? You know, what we care about is if this new information moves someone into a different category. So if they are intermediate risk, particularly for those who are in the intermediate risk category. So we talk about low risk, which is less than 10% risk of heart disease over 10 years. We have moderate, which is 10 to 20. Then we have high, which is greater than 20. And that's used by most guidelines around the world. And so if someone's in that intermediate risk group and we move them up to a high risk where they should be taking a statin, or down to a low risk where they no longer are really a candidate for it, then that's potentially useful. So this study looked at data from over 160,000 patients in cohort studies. So cohort studies take a bunch of people, then follow them forward in time and sees what happens to them. And there were 37 studies that contributed data, and they looked at fatal and non-fatal cardiovascular outcomes. And so they had about 10 years of follow-up. And during that time, there were about 15,000 heart disease outcomes that they observed. So big study, certainly adequate power, and from a lot of different prospective cohort studies. And, the patients looked pretty typical. They were all over age 40, which makes sense because that's where, you are typically thinking about this heart disease prevention. So they looked at apolipoprotein A1 and B, lipoprotein A, and what's called lipoprotein-associated phospholipase A2, which needs a new name, I think. What they looked at was replacing, first of all, normally you just get total cholesterol and HDL or HDL and LDL and look at that, and they tried replacing that with these new markers, and that didn't help anything. Then they looked at adding these new markers to the traditional risk markers, and they did slightly change the classification. So what they figured was if you have 100,000 patients, about 15% would be classified intermediate risk. And if you use those novel markers in that group of 15,000, you'd really actually only have a fairly small impact on reclassification. So the best was lipoprotein A, and that ended up reclassifying about 4% who would now need a statin. The others were around 2.7% for the lipoprotein-associated phospholipase A2 and 1% for the apolipoproteins, which are probably the ones people know best. So if you're going to use one of these, I would limit its use to those who are in the intermediate risk category and look at the lipoprotein A. That ends up being the one that is most helpful for reclassifying patients. Now, whether we should do this or not, really, I think you got to look at the cost of this. You know, these tests aren't necessarily cheap. What is the impact? You'd have to treat probably, you would prevent one additional outcome over 10 years for every 800 people who get this lipoprotein A test. That's not terrible. Maybe 800 number needed to screen of 800 is useful. It may be in the ballpark. So this gives us some good information. I think the guideline folks who make the NHLBI guidelines are going to be looking at this, and they still haven't released the ATP4. They were supposed to have released it, and this may go into that guideline. I'm going to personally wait until I see what their assessment is of all this evidence before I adopt it as usual practice.
Just to be clear, what you're suggesting, if we are inclined to use this, and I understand that you're suggesting we do that with caution, at least at this point, but if we are, this would be done in series, so that you would do cholesterol to classify a high, intermediate, or low, and it's only for that next group, the intermediate group, that you would then go on and use one of these tests for.
Yeah, and I think that's where the guideline is probably going to be headed. I have no inside information, but just based on following the literature, that would be my guess. And the other test that may be helpful at the sort of reclassification of these intermediate risk folks is the electron beam CT, the coronary calcium scoring, which we just had a little pro and con, and I argued the con side for that because I don't feel like the evidence is strong enough to use that, particularly since it involves radiation exposure.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Mark. It's something for us to look forward to as these guidelines come out, and we'll talk again next week.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, bye.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.